Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on current events when we come back. You know, when the federal income tax was launched back in 1913, the income tax was levied only upon the super wealthy, the richest one-half of 1% of our entire population, with a top tax rate of only 7%. Well, today, of course, the fears of those early opponents of the tax have been more than fully realized. By the end of Herbert Hoover's term, the top rate had jumped to over 60%. And by the time Franklin D. Roosevelt was done, the top rate had topped 90%, and the tax had been dramatically expanded to seize the incomes of the middle class for the first time. In 1913, the average family had to work until January 30th to earn enough to satisfy the tax man at every level. Well, this year, the average American family will have to work all the way through May 12th in order to earn enough to pay their federal, their state, and their local tax bills. Now, when you compare this to the plight of medieval serfs, says economist Daniel J. Mitchell, they only had to give the lord of the manor a third of their output, and they were considered slaves. So what does that make us? Well, this income tax and Social Security tax violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant, including our English common law. And this income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal activities. The income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and Social Security is the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto. That's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask the question, do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Now, tax and status is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Hey, we've been talking about current affairs, and last time I talked to you about Prohibition 2 by George Will. Gave you an article from the Calamity Howler concerning the Imus controversy, and then finished it up with the Grandich letter, a special alert to his readers. The Grandich newsletter is published by Peter Grandich. If you want to subscribe, it costs you money, but he also puts out a commentary free, which is what I delivered to you last time on Kitco.com. I forgot to put that out. Kitco, spell K-I-T-C-O. Just go to www.kitco.com/IND/Grandich, and you can pick up the Grandich special reports. Now remember, those are free of charge, sponsored by Kitco. Now, there was an article came out by Chris Laird on Iran. Now, I've mentioned this Iran problem a time or two here on the program, and it's a matter of time. I don't know just when, but it's a matter of time until we go to war against Iran. The Iranians are on a collision course with the United States, just like Saddam Hussein was. And they control about 10% of the world's oil. Now, the game that's being played is total control of the world's petroleum. That's the game. American oil companies want it, and we actually have it. We control Saudi Arabia. Now we control Iraq. We have controlled Venezuela, but we're losing control of Venezuela. So it's just a matter of time until we have regime change in Venezuela. Violent overthrow of the current government. Just bear with it, because that's the way it goes. Now, you won't find the violent overthrow of the government in North Korea or Cuba or someplace else in the world, because there's no oil there. But where there's oil now, there's going to be capitulation to the United States, or there's going to be a regime change, or there's going to be an attempt at regime change. So tuck that one into your heart here, and here's what Chris had to say about Iran. He says, the ongoing situation with Iran is hugely gold and oil bullish right now and will be for the coming months. The recent statement by Iran that they will free the British naval hostages is just one detail. It really doesn't solve anything fundamental. First of all, before I discuss why, I want to comment on several emails that I got about my views that Iran is going to be attacked. The comments went along the line, the U.S. is too tied down in Iraq and won't even think about another war in Iran. Well, I disagree. So let's get into the reasons why there is likely to be an attack on Iran. Iran is in the way of U.S. success in Iraq. So, first of all, the United States is bogged down in Iraq, and that's true. But Iran is a major reason why. And Iran and Syria have fostered sectarian strife between the Sunnis and the Shiites in much of the Middle East. They've done it in Lebanon, they've done it in Iraq. They've done it in Palestine. And they've even done it inside many of the modern Arab nations there, such as Egypt. In fact, Egypt commented recently that Iran is fostering major Muslim-on-Muslim strife, trying to extend a Shiite influence in the Muslim world, in Egypt, in Saudi Arabia. The Saudis and other moderate Arabs are concerned at Iran's building interference and domination in the Arab world. Syria is closely aligned in this whole structure, and they are trying to gain back their ruling domination in Lebanon, among other things. The tension is so severe that the opposite sectarian camps are even burning each other alive, reminiscent of the Protestants and Catholics of the Middle Ages. The severity of this strife to Mideast stability cannot be underestimated. Now, this is not to mention that Israel is constantly being pressed with the Palestinian issue and the risk of attacks from insurgents from Lebanon and even from inside of Syria, where they are being staged. Israel has stated that they will never allow a hostile neighbor to have an atomic bomb, and the Iranians are going to develop an atomic bomb. Now, let's enter Iran, Russia, and China in an alliance into this picture. You see, the Russians and the Chinese are using Iran as a counterweight to the U.S. influence in the Middle East region. Iran clearly is emboldened by this support. Both China and Russia recently have made comments that Iran needs to back off their nuclear aspirations, and Russia even pulled out hundreds of their technicians building a new atomic generation station, ostensibly because Iran is not paying their bills on time. But I really suspect that a lot of this posturing is merely for public consumption, that behind the scenes, Iran appears continually emboldened. And I doubt very much that they would be nearly as bold as they are unless Russia and China were still very much behind them. Both Russia and China have huge energy contracts with Iran. There's big money involved here. Now, the fact is that Russia pulled out all of those technicians probably because they suspect that a U.S. attack is imminent. It's not just because of money. It's because there is an imminent American attack in the winds. Now, there's also a weather reason to move ahead with this attack soon, because in the summer, that area of the world gets so hot that it's almost impossible to fight, particularly if you're an aggressor. If the United States really does intend to do something with Iran, it's probably going to be soon rather than later, just for weather reasons. And this is particularly true if the U.S. allied soldiers have to go to MOP chemical suits. Now, these MOP chemical suits are stifling. They are full-body covers. And with those clumsy, impractical U.S. gas masks. Now, the stakes are very high. Russia and China have both stated that they will defend their interests in Iran. Now, should the United States attack Iran, I surmise that if the United States does launch such an attack, it will be so swift that there would be very little that Russia and China could do but complain. And I read that the U.S. has the ability to attack 10,000 targets in Iran in 24 hours. And that's why there are three carrier task force groups in the Persian Gulf today. And the U.S. is building that force relentlessly. Now, the United States has moved three carrier battle groups into that area. It takes two of these battle groups to have 24-hour-a-day flight operations. Each aircraft carrier is good for 12 hours until mandatory servicing is then needed. The United States has relieved or moved many senior U.S. commanders in Iraq and the Middle East who were not very enthusiastic with the prospects of a U.S. attack on Iran. And the United States has quietly built huge military bases all around Iran over the last several years in the former Soviet territory. Now, the moderate Arabs will be looking the other way. And the modern Arab states have stated publicly that they are concerned about a nuclear-armed Iran. These are the moderate states, particularly given Iran's recent propensity to push their agenda. Iran is radical Shiite, and the Iranians are fostering domestic insurgencies and Muslim strife in Saudi Arabia, Afghanistan, Lebanon, Palestine, Iraq, and the EU. That's right, the EU is scared to death of Iranian-fostered violence in places such as we saw in France during the past summers. And if Iran is actually attacked, I would surmise that the moderate Arab states will be publicly angry and very privately gleeful. Now, there's U.S. pressure on Iraq. And the United States cannot get any control in Iraq with Iran in the way. The only solution, then, is to seriously defang the Iranians. If the United States were to abandon Iraq now, Iran will be totally ascendant in the region. Iraq will turn into an Iranian puppet state. Sectarian strife will likely spread across the entire Middle East. The Saudis and others are just totally incensed that the United States has made such a mess of the whole Iraq war. But frankly, Iran has interfered so badly now that the United States is not able to get ahead of that mess in Iraq. The Saudis and others are now faced with the prospect of a nuclear Iran, an Iranian puppet state in Iraq, a politically paralyzed United States and ever-increasing Iranian domination. The back of them are likely a ruthless Chinese and Russian monopoly with comparatively unlimited resources to get what they will and what they will want out of that region. That is a totally untenable circumstance for Europe, the United States, and the moderate Arab states. The Arab moderates will be reduced in this scenario to mere local puppet states with the ever-growing threat of new domestic strife if they oppose Iran and even invasion and so on. Remember the original Iran-Iraq wars, the Iraq invasion of Kuwait and all of the rest. Of course, the moderate Arabs are not pleased with U.S. interference there either, but possibly the alternative for them is much worse. So I've written to my subscribers that with all of these reasons, to expect there will not be an attack on Iran is to be blind. And the only question is, when will this attack occur? I'm not a prophet. I don't know. I just know that it's going to happen. Now, the Prudent Squirrel newsletter is Chris Laird's macroeconomic gold newsletters. Subscribers get 44 issues a year, published Sunday, as well as midweek email market alerts as needed. Now, this is put out also by Kitco. If you go to kitco.com and then hit /IND/Laird, L-A-I-R-D, you can get copies of the Laird newsletter updates. Now, remember, these newsletters that are put out by these newsletter writers like Chris Laird, Peter Grandich, Richard Doughty, the Mogambo guru, David Petch, and so on. These newsletters you subscribe to. I'm not promoting them one way or the other. But I do subscribe to many of these newsletters here at the law school. We report daily on information that we receive from all around the world through these underground newsletters or underground media sources. Now, Peter Petch, P-E-T-C-H, wrote a neat article here. It's called, "It's Better in Your Freezer. Where's the Beef?" Well, you know, for years I've been subscribing to the belief that we're going into a famine circumstance, and I've reported that here on the Law Hour many, many times. There's a 38-day food supply in the world. That is, 6.5 billion people on planet Earth have a 38-day supply. I wouldn't feel good if I had a 38-day supply. I don't think that that's anything to brag about. That's about as close to the ragged edge of famine and starvation, I think, as you can get. Now, there are 15 million people a year worldwide who die from starvation. 15 million people per year. Some estimates run as high as 20 or 25 million. I like to stay on the low end when I make my reports. And when I say this is the number, this is the low end number. Everybody is in agreement that 15 million are dying. There is some disagreement as to whether it's as high as 20 million or 25 million. Everybody is in agreement that 15 million. Now, listen, boys and girls, 100 million people a year are being born and added to the world's population every year. So, you know, every 10 years we're adding a billion people to the world's population. That's over and above the number of people that die. 15% of the people who are born every year die from malnutrition. That sounds like a pretty serious, pretty severe famine condition to me. I don't know about you. Now, of course, if you're living in Canada or the United States or Australia, you're sitting there saying, well, that doesn't affect me. I live in one of the have nations. Why, we've got plenty here. You people down in Australia, take a look at the map, and up north of you is the fourth largest country in the world, called Indonesia, and just north of them lies China. Now, boys and girls, out there in that broad Pacific Ocean, with this continent of Australia with about 30 million people on it, have you ever thought what those people in Indonesia and China are going to do when they're struck by famine and need more living space? Honest to God, do you believe 30 million Aussies are going to stop 1 billion Chinese? I mean, it's time for you people to wake up. You know, you had a friend in your God and you gave him the finger. I'm not sure that God's going to protect Australia in the next round like he did in World War II. Now, when we talk about where's the beef, we're talking about food. Now, several different things I want to address first before getting to analysis of the HUI. The first one has to do with meat. The governments do not include the price of food or energy in the core rate of inflation. Soon, they will be including those that lie in graveyards into their index to further average the price down, and I am sure of it. So everything that you or I have to buy in the grocery store, no matter how much costs rise, is not going to be included in their definition of inflation. This is the government's way of hiding the volumes of money being created out of thin air and of hiding the resulting inflation, the incessant rise in prices. Now, boys and girls, I don't know about you, but the price of corn has doubled over the past year. Have you paid attention to that? Have you noticed that since the November elections here in America, the price of gasoline has gone from $2 a gallon up to $2.75 a gallon? I just thought I'd share that with you. Now, the government doesn't include food and gasoline in the CPI. That's the cost or the consumer price index, the cost of or the increasing cost of our goods that we're buying down at the grocery store. Now, everything is going up in price. Copper is going up in price. Gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, oil. Now, it is true that there are some things that are going down in price, but when you average them out, inflation is running at approximately 11% here in the United States. And don't think for a minute that it's not going on in Australia and Canada and every place else. All the nations of the world are following the United States of America in increasing their money supplies. There is a worldwide hyperinflation coming, boys and girls. So you might as well start thinking about what are you going to do when it hits. So, Petch goes on to say, the coming of peak oil is causing a movement in the United States to produce ethanol in order to provide an alternative fuel source. The big corporations are pushing for corn because it is big money. And the use of straw, grass, sugar beets, and so on, is far more efficient in the energy balance of the production equation. More energy is put into growing corn, fermenting corn, distilling corn, making the ethanol and transporting it that will be done in generating the energy in the car. And also, ethanol damages rubber gaskets, is corrosive, and has a whole host and plethora of problems. And the biggest problem is that corn is a staple for many poor families and also for animal feed. Now, you know, there's a great controversy over this ethanol program. And everybody recognizes that we need to solve our energy problem. I want to point out to all of you, in case you didn't know this, that here in the United States, we have the largest reserves of oil in the world. Let me repeat that, in case you'd never heard this before. The largest reserves of oil in the world are in the United States of America, and they're concentrated in three states, Utah, Colorado, and Wyoming. And it's called oil shale. And there are 3.6 trillion barrels of oil locked up in that oil shale that used to cost $30 a barrel to produce. And there's nobody in the oil world that's going to produce a barrel of oil out of shale as long as there's one barrel of oil left in Saudi Arabia, Iraq, or Iran. So if you thought that we need oil out of the Middle East because the oil is being, or the oil is running out or we're reaching peak oil, you're out of touch with reality. There's another statistic just came out the other day. The Canadians are developing because of the higher price for oil. It's up to $60 a barrel. And it makes that oil sand up there in Alberta pretty lucrative. So they're up there raising oil production. They're hoping to be producing around 1 billion barrels a day for export in the next year or two. That, boys and girls, is hugely significant. Hugely significant in the world's balance of oil, or the oil needs. And the Canadians, now that they've gotten into this oil sand, the tar sands, I guess they call it, or oil sands, have discovered that they too have 1 trillion barrels of oil up there. Now, all of the oil reserves in the world, you know, the conventional oil reserves that we pump out of the ground are 1 trillion barrels. The Canadians have that much oil in Alberta. Furthermore, they haven't discovered all of it, they haven't proved it all, and they think that they've got 2, 3, or 4 times that much, depending upon who you're listening to. Well, if they've got 2 times that much, that's 2 trillion barrels. If they got 3 times that much, it's 3 trillion barrels. If they got 4 times that much, they got 4 trillion barrels. Hell, you Canadians might have more oil up there than we have here locked up in our tar sands. Now, we Americans have enough oil in our country, in 3 states, to run our country for 666 years at the rate that we're consuming oil today. We need Iraqi oil like we need 5 thumbs on our toes, or on our feet, or on our ears. Now, as long as our government is controlled by the oil companies, we're going to have peak oil. I mean, let's be intelligent people. If you owned all of the oil in the world, would you want to produce that oil and sell it for 25 cents a gallon, which is about what it ought to sell for based upon what the production costs are out of Saudi Arabia? Do you know that oil sells for 12 cents a gallon in Venezuela? Now, boys and girls, if you can sell gasoline for 12 cents a gallon in Venezuela, it tells you that the price of gasoline is worth 12 cents a gallon. And you're paying $3 a gallon out in California. Now, if I was the head of Exxon, I would have peak oil 24 hours a day. I would be cutting production. I would be causing gasoline lines and charging $10 a gallon for gasoline. No, it's nothing personal, kids. It's just business is business. And the oil companies hold the monopoly, which, after all, was the purpose in all of this environmental legislation through the 60s, 70s, and 80s, was to drive all of the little oil producers out of business. And they have. They've succeeded. And now there's just a few mavericks. Saddam Hussein was one, and the Venezuelans are another, and there's a couple, 3 more out there, littler producers. And we'll drive all of those people out of business, and we'll absorb all of them as well. But we're not going to produce any oil in our tar sands, I mean, not tar sands, but the oil shale, for that very reason. It's just profits. Peak oil is political, and peak oil is here, I don't deny it. But it's not physical, it's political. Always remember that. Higher prices for animal feed, that is, for this corn stalk, higher prices for animal feed translates into higher meat prices, higher cereal prices. The price of corn has doubled over the past year, so people should be expecting to see meat in the supermarket rise by as much as 30 to 40% by year's end. Now, that may sound crazy to you. There is a fixed cost for animal feed, and a doubling in the price of corn, children, will amount to a doubling of the percentage that goes into the growth of cattle, pigs, and sheep. Now, more and more farmers are going to be planting corn this year, and there is only so much land available for producing crops, such as corn. So other crops, such as soy, wheat, barley, and flax, are going also to rise in price because of the reduction in output with an ever-increasing global demand. We're on the cusp of seeing food inflation by 10 to 15% year over year for the next 4 or 5 years. Let me repeat that, children, in case you missed it. We here in the United States have decided that we are going to make gasoline out of corn. It's not very efficient. It takes 75% of the energy that you receive out of a gallon of ethanol to produce a gallon of ethanol. So for every gallon of ethanol that you're going to burn in your car, it'll take 1 3/4 gallons of ethanol production. By contrast, when you're producing petroleum out of the ground, it takes 17%. When you produce ethanol from sugar, it takes 6%. So when you're in Brazil producing ethanol out of sugar cane, it takes 6% of a gallon to produce a gallon. It's very economical there. But producing it out of corn takes 75% of a gallon. When you're talking about oil out of the ground, it takes 17%. So it's very efficient for the Brazilians, very efficient for the oil producers, very inefficient to produce ethanol out of corn. I don't know who thunk up this corn idea. Probably Archer Daniels Midland, Cargill, probably farm groups, you know, like Farm Bureau or something like that. I don't know exactly, but more than likely, those people that have money invested in or money to be made from the taxpayers and from the consumers. But it's not very well thought out. Now, as a consequence of this, boys and girls, you people living in the cities are going to see increases in food prices. At the very same time that the population of the world is growing by 100 million a year, you're going to see a slowdown, a cut in the production of food, particularly in corn, particularly in a particular grain crop that is crucial. Now, that's politics. It doesn't have anything to do with the free marketplace. It doesn't have anything to do with reason, logic, or common sense. It has everything to do with economics and everything to do with politics. Nothing to do with common sense. Hey, hang on, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, or they may be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. And they're mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network, or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just call the law school direct if you prefer. The number is 417-273-4967 if you don't have a computer. That number again, 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing a newsletter put out by Kitco, and it is written by David Petch, P-E-T-C-H, called Where's the Beef? Right now, there's a 3 to 4 week window for meat prices to remain reasonably low due to the excess meat being sold onto the open market and no new purchases of new feed supplies. Everyone should own a chest freezer and should consider loading up on different meats and fish. While the price, or when the price of beef rises, people will shift to chicken and fish until there is a balance of high prices across the board for beef, pork, chicken, and fish. Now, that may sound a bit like hoarding, but you're better off to buy now when the prices are lower rather than waiting to buy the stuff when the prices are 30, 40, or 50% higher. Now, with ethanol demand, farmers are going to require holding larger and larger percentages of their crop to ensure that enough feed is available for the animals and for the following year's planting. I think that the United States could soon become a zero exporter of corn in the few coming years, which will cause severe hatred from Mexicans who rely upon corn for tortillas, which is the primary diet of the poor. Americans in general will not care about this, however, but how will they feel when Mexico becomes a net oil importer by the year 2012? Now, this is what is going to transpire for most countries that used to export food and export oil. When there is not enough for even their own populations, they become classified as net importers of that item, such as an importer of corn, oil, wheat, natural gas. Canada likely will stop selling natural gas to the United States within the next 6 to 8 years, when there's hardly any left. So nations will be fighting among nations for the dwindling means of survival. Now, I want to point out to you, boys and girls, in Matthew chapter 24, the Messiah made that very same observation some 2,000 years ago. He said, nation will rise against nation, and there will be wars and rumors of wars. But he said, see that you be not troubled, because the end is not yet. So if you're waiting for the second coming, during the midst of these wars and rumors of wars and the shortages that are developing and the sides that are being taken by the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians on one side, and then the Americans and the Europeans and the Israelis on the other side, don't panic yet. The end isn't coming yet. The Messiah said so. But it's getting closer. And these are the signs of the times that he told us about in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. So it's time to get prepared. It's time to start thinking seriously about the second coming and about impending world famine. Famine is coming to the United States, Canada, and Australia. Rationing is coming. Now, I lived through World War II, and I can remember the rationing. I remember rationing in the Korean War. Hell, I remember rationing and rent and price controls when Richard Nixon was president back in 1971 and 72. So, boys and girls, it isn't something new. It's been around for a long time. And now that we Americans, Canadians, and Australians have adopted communism, remember communism, the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto have now supplanted, surpassed, replaced the 10 Commandments. Under the 10 Commandments, we all indulge in the surplus. But under the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, we all stand in line and share the shortage. Now, we've made our beds. And as my old granny used to say, you made your bed, sweetheart. Now go sleep in it. But there's more. With ethanol demand, farmers are going to be required. They will need to hold larger and larger percentages of their crops back. I'm a farmer, and I can tell you that as the prices of feed go up, then I have to charge more for my products that I sell. And that's just where reality is. Now, have you ever wondered why so many countries are secretly building so many detention centers? Many countries are building detention centers, children. And that is to try and contain the have-nots of the population. The North American population has never had to worry about famine or war or energy shortages. There has always been something to fall back on. Unfortunately, a lack of government insight and failure to follow through with the energy policies put in place during the 1970s today are all but a dream now. When the requirement for nuclear energy and other fuels are needed, the infrastructure will simply not be there. We have not built an oil refinery in this country for 30 years, children. And that's why parts of North America will be essentially walking with candles for the next 10 to 15 years until the dust settles. And you want to remember that these candles are made from wax, which is a petroleum distillate. Now, I know that this sounds like Chicken Little, and we have never had famine in America. But your God has promised you that there is famine coming to a city near you shortly. Now, pay attention. He wasn't whistling Dixie through a straw hat when he wrote Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. Now combine those with Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, and then, as they say down at the Blue Room, read 'em and weep. And meanwhile, as David Petch says, better to have the beef in your freezer than to have it down at the government's community warehouse. called Walmart. This portion of today's article highlights the need to plan for food shortages as a part of the strategy going forward in the next coming 5 to 8 years. The peak energy issue is going to literally occur like a big rock falling from the sky and just sitting in the middle of the field, and it's going to be there for everybody to see. The implications will quickly be seen, and the change in public mindset will shortly soon follow. The change will be a shift to fight or flight, with emotion taking control over reason, logic, and common sense. Preservation of capital will jump to the forefront, and with the United States government stupidly trying to pull the chain of that sleeping giant called China, it is not going to help us at all. China now has more than $1 trillion U.S. dollars on hand, and if they play economic warfare, hyperinflation in the United States would occur sooner than almost anybody would expect. Now, is China playing fair? No, China is not playing fair with their currency, and they are trying to overcome the issue. But with 1.2 billion people, it becomes very difficult to regulate things, and both parties are at fault. But when one nation is a debtor nation, and the other nation holds $1 trillion of our currency, they, the moneyed people, dictate the rules, and if not yet, they very soon will. There's an old adage, children, that says, "He who has the gold makes the rules." And children, the Chinese have the gold. And you may rest assured that shortly the Chinese are going to make the rules. And the rest of us are going to sit down, shut up, fold our hands, and do what we are told. I know it's a wild new concept for Americans, but get used to it. It's coming shortly. Now, there is going to send, or this is going to send, commodity stocks, gold and silver to the moon. Now, that's why we have been banging on the table to build positions in bullion and energy. Bullion and energy. When people are in a frantic panic, they will pay anything to save their dollars. And by already preparing for what is in the pipe, we can act in a mechanical fashion without falling into the run with the pack mentality. This is the run with the pack mentality that occurs when the government comes in with wage and price controls, when they come in with rationing. When there's rationing, that means that when you go to the gas station, it doesn't make any difference how much money you have in your pocket. What makes a difference is, do you have a Class A, Class B, or Class C ration card? That'll determine how many gallons of gasoline you're going to get. When you go to the grocery store, the difference will be in whether you have the red, the blue, or the white buttons as to how much meat and what kind of meat you're going to buy, irrespective of whether you have money or no money. Now, the people without money won't be buying meat, and the people with the ration coupons will be buying the meat. And if you don't have a Social Security number, you won't be getting any ration cards. So for you people out there without birth certificates and without Social Security numbers, without your mark of the beast, you will not be able to buy, sell, or trade, children. So you'd better be able to live independently of Social Security and government restrictions or government rationing. Now, the main focus of my work pertains to analysis of the U.S. dollar index, the S&P 500 index, and the 10-year U.S. Treasury index, the American Metal Exchange and Gold Bugs Index, and the AMEX Oil Index, using market analysis specified in former articles that I wrote titled The Technical Palette, The Elliott Wave, Bollinger Bands, and he has a number of other credits here in this last paragraph. The guy's name is David Petch, P-E-T-C-H. He's selling his newsletter, and he publishes on Kitco.com. I thought I'd put this little excerpt in because I thought that it was apropos. So let me refresh your recollection here. There's three newsletters here that are four newsletters that are free. Now, I suggest that you send an offering. You send a free will offering to A.V. Krebs. He relies upon these. He does not publish for profit. He's an evangelist. He's trying to get the word out. He wants you to understand his point of view. And he's a liberal. So for you conservatives out there, maybe you don't want to subscribe to the Calamity Howler or the Agricultural Exchange newsletters, but they're published free by A.V. Krebs, and you can just go to avkrebs@comcast.net. Just send him an email. Say, hey, put me on your mailing list, and he'll do it free. Now, somebody has to support A.V. Krebs, and if you don't support A.V. Krebs, well, then he can't publish. It's just that simple. So people like me, I get on the air and I say, well, now, do you want this or not? You know, the guy isn't out here charging you $130 a year as a subscription price, like some of the newsletters do. I'll tell you about one that does charge $130. And it's put out here. It's called the International Forecaster. And the International Forecaster is put out by Bob Chapman. And it's well worth $130 a year. I'm not knocking the forecaster at all. It's worth the whole 130. Hell, it's worth 260. Maybe it's worth 530. I'm not knocking that at all. And Chapman has to get paid in order to put out the newsletter that he does. He puts it out twice a week. Probably, 45, 50 issues a year. There's a couple of midweek programs that he doesn't put out. But that's 104 issues, you know, a year, if you put out twice a week, you know, 52 weeks in the year. And just the pages alone, this one I'm going to read from a little later on, is 32 pages. I mean, this guy puts out 20 pages twice a week. That's 40 pages a week. But Krebs puts out a pretty good newsletter, too. Two of them. In fact, one of them on agriculture and one of them on populist political issues. 12 pages. And that's 24 pages a week. How many pages is that? 52 weeks a year times 24 pages a week is 1,248 pages a year come from A.V. Krebs free. So when I suggest that you send the guy $30 a year, you know, that's just pocket change. It's chicken feed. Hell, you can't buy coffee and donuts for that, for crying out loud. If you sent $30 a month, I think it would be more reasonable, $150 a year. But, you know, send him something, would you? That's called the Calamity Howler and the Agriculture Exchange paper. I think it's the Agriculture Examiner. That's what it is. avkrebs@comcast.net. Let me tell you about this other one, Granditch. Granditch is free. Now, he puts out a newsletter. If you want to subscribe to his newsletter, if you'd go to www.kitco.com, you can get Granditch here. And then he's got a page. You know, when you print this out, down here at the bottom, he puts important disclosure. And then he says, Granditch Publications Incorporated provides research, analysis, and investor relation services for certain of the companies featured in the articles appearing in its publication. And it's put out by Granditch Publications, LLC, P.O. Box 243 in Perrinville, New Jersey. And he's got a phone number here at 732-642-3992. Now, this is a teaser. This is a come on. He wants to sell you his newsletter. And I don't subscribe to the Peter Granditch newsletter or the Chris Laird newsletter or the David Petch newsletter, but they publish newsletters, and I subscribe to several newsletters, and then I take these free newsletters off of Kitco. But, you know, I'm not knocking them. I'm not telling you you shouldn't subscribe to them, because I don't. I can't subscribe to every newsletter in the world. There's probably 1,000 of these newsletters out there. And the reason I bring them to your attention from time to time is that you can't get the truth out of CBS News. It isn't there. And if some guy comes along and he tells you the truth from time to time, as I pointed out with this Imus, you know, this Imus story over here, I'm not defending Imus's racist statements concerning those college girls. I'm pointing out that shutting Imus up is just an excuse to stifle free speech. And one of these days it'll happen to me. You know, there's not everybody that wants to listen to the Law Hour nor Editorial Review. And the solution to that's very simple. You reach over and you take the dial in your hand and you just turn it. And you can shut me up in a heartbeat. That's all you got to do. Just turn me off. That doesn't mean that you ought to shut me up. I think that the Law Hour and Editorial Review puts out good information. Good information. Information that you don't want to hear, but it's good information nevertheless. And it's good information that comes from a variety of sources, so that we're not just giving you one viewpoint. You get the viewpoint of a number of different people who all have views that ought to be listened to, whether you agree with them or not. And then, you know, you make up your own mind as to whether or not you want to do this or not. Now, I just told you about this where's the beef thing over here. I said, well, now, do you want to believe this guy that, hey, there's a shortage of food coming up or not? I don't care. You're not going to offend me any. But it might be of some value to you because the guy isn't whistling Dixies through a straw hat. The price of corn has doubled over the past year. What do you think that's going to mean for food prices and tortillas? Last year you were paying tortilla prices. Next year you're going to be paying tortilla prices. What do you think the price is going to be when the price of corn doubles? Just mull that one over until we meet again. Let me give you a final reminder that you've been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.